Welcome back. You're listening to Eye on the Outdoors, award-winning radio show.
All she oak swamp bottom do drop falling. Old Tom answering a hoot owl's call. Nothing like the sound when the day breaks. Me and Daddy in the woods on a Saturday. See his granddaddy hunted these hills, and I hope someday that my kids will. He said, do me a favor before I'm gone. Love this land and pass it on.
Yes, indeed. Pass it on. Welcome back, everyone. Listen to Ray I Radio, Eye on the Outdoors. This is your host, Ray I. Have a special segment here, a special feature, a one-on-one with a fellow Legends of the Outdoors National Hall of Fame member and an icon in the outdoor industry. You want to scoot in real close to that campfire. But today we have Mr. Cuz Strickland, Mossy Oak, with us, and we're going to talk about the history of Mr. Strickland. And hello, Cuz.
That's a scary thought. Number one, I think I should be interviewing you instead of you interviewing me. I always feel weird when I'm getting interviewed by Ray I, Turkey Hunter's Bible. I mean, the guy who I used to look at up on stage and stuff. It feels a little odd, but I'll do the best I can. So.
You'll be just fine. Right. My friend, you'll do great. Hey, let's go back to your roots, the love of the outdoors. Where it all started for you? Everybody has some place they start.
Well, my dad was a big outdoorsman, but it was 95% fishing with him. He was a lifelong military guy. He spent his life in the Army. And so he finally settled in there, southern Mississippi. Natchez is the town I grew up in. But he was a big fisherman. He fished me out by the time I was like 15. I was just done. He didn't hunt a lot. Now we would go periodically, we'd go on a rabbit hunt with one of his buddies, or maybe a couple times a year, we'd go to the Homochitta National Forest is where I grew up doing any hunting, and he would deer hunt a little bit, but I loved the hunting way more than I did the fishing. And my older brother, he loved the fishing more than he did the hunting, but something just snapped with me. And man, I got a buddy when I was around 13, and he was 15. He already had his driver's license, and he liked to hunt as much as I did. So I learned the Homochitta National Forest probably better than anybody. So it all started with me out there on what we call the Sandy Creek Wildlife Preserve. And I was just bit by that bug.
Growing up, did you ever think you'd be making a living in the outdoor industry?
Man, I never dreamed about being in the outdoor industry. Somebody told me one time that passion trumps everything, and I believe that, because Lord knows I don't have any kind of formal education in the outdoor stuff, but I had a passion for it. When I see somebody breaking into the business now and doing this, I was like, if they got enough passion, they'll make it. But I never dreamed about working in the outdoor industry. My dream was to have a job where I could make enough money where I could continue to hunt and buy the good stuff. You know, I never had the good stuff when I was growing up. I never was able to get a Browning BAR or the best tree stand or any of that stuff. I always dreamed about having enough money to do that. You know, back when I was a kid, there really wasn't that much of an outdoor industry. Same way with you. I mean, there were sporting goods stores, and of course you had the big brands, Remington and Winchester and stuff like that, but there was no outdoor industry per se when I was growing up. So no, I never had an inkling. It was just kind of divine intervention that kind of placed me where I went. Here's what happened with me. I was working. I was like everybody else. I got married young. I found the prettiest girl in Natchez. Couldn't believe she went out with me. So we got married very young. I got her to say yes, and I said, man, I ain't doing any. I'll never do better than that. I had a great job. I was working at a warehouse called Riverside Central Services, and it was huge deal. We stored all kinds of stuff, and it was 5 days a week, so I got to hunt on the weekends. And all of a sudden that job just ended, like they closed everything down. Well, I went to work the next day in a sporting goods store. I said, I can do that until I find me another really good job, because I was always up there anyway. I'd go up there on my free time and help them rig bows and put scopes on guns. It was just, you know, I was just infatuated with all aspects of that. So I called him. He said, yeah, come on up here, man. It was a good time of the year. So I started rigging bows. And while I was working at that sporting goods store, I was selling turkey calls for Will Primos, who was at the time still making them out of his house. You know, he just had one or two mouth calls on his head. The first camcorder came into Natchez, Mississippi at a Sears and Roebuck, and a buddy of mine bought it. And we immediately camouflaged this thing all up, and I was out filming turkey hunts with it because I was just fascinated with filming a turkey hunt for whatever reason. And at some point, I sent a VHS tape up to Will Primos and said, hey, man, we're using your calls. Check this out. We killed some turkeys. And the next thing you know, he comes down to the sporting goods store with this giant TV camera that he had bought from a TV station. This thing was gigantic back then. Wanted to know, could I film a turkey hunt with that? He'd already done his little audio cassette, which was pretty cutting edge at the time of an actual turkey hunt. And anyway, I took that big camera and tried my best to learn how to use it. And the first spring I used it, I got maybe $5 or $10 a day and 8 cents a mile is what I got for my efforts, which, you know, that wasn't much money. I managed to film a couple of hunts with it. And first thing you know, I'm working for him full time with this gigantic old TV camera, and people can't really get their hands around it, especially some of the young people. But back then, if you got video of anything, it was earth shaking, you know, a turkey's head behind a bush. Oh my God, you know, but this thing weighed like close to 90 pounds when everything was on it. The tripod was made out of wood on the legs and had a lead head. The camera had a cord to plug into a recording deck that had 3/4-inch tapes that were huge, and it was just the logistics of getting it through the woods was a monster. Filmed the first truth tapes for Will Primos, and that kind of got me started in the business. And in the midst of all that, there was a lot of travel, and my kids were little, and that didn't work out. I went back to work for the sporting goods store at the same time. I was still going to film for them, but I went to the first SHOT Show that Toxie Hayes ever went to from Mossy Oak, and my wife was with me. She actually saw their booth. She come and got me. She said, there's a couple of guys here. It was Toxie Hayes and Bill Sugg, who's still Bill's first employee. He's the president of the company. They had a little booth way down in the dungeon, about 10 feet across, and she took me down there, and I saw that Mossy Oak bottom land. I went, wow. I mean, I knew from a distance that was pretty special. Anyway, I went and talked to them, ordered some, and was fascinated with it. You know, they were home state boys. And I went back and I started calling all my friends in the business and saying, you need to get some of this because nobody else has it. It's cutting edge stuff. And I started selling. And Toxie called me one day and said, dude, you're selling more than we are. So I went to work for Toxie Hayes, and I think it was like January of 1987 is how I landed at Mossy Oak.
Man, I'm loving this. I'm going to pour me another cup of coffee. I'm getting some goosebumps here, cuz.
Yeah, I could take the Mossy Oak story on further.
I know you could. I mean, we could go on forever and ever and ever. But as you were talking about that, the kids being little and the travel, man, can I relate to that. Oh, my gosh.
I know you
sound like you were talking about me. Yeah, we could go on forever. There's so much more we could cover and so much more we could talk about, cuz. But we only have so much time on radio. Maybe we'll have to do this again and continue this later on. But I would like to ask you, because I get this all the time. It used to be, how can I become an outdoor writer? Then it became, how can I be on television? A lot of, how can I be on television? And I get it all the time. How can I get into this business? What do I need to do to get in this business? I get asked that a lot. I think we probably all do. So how can I get into the outdoor industry?
I get asked all the time if people want to get into the business. You see a lot of young guys, and they're like, what classes do I need to take at college? Do I need to do wildlife biology? There's so many young, and that's good. You know, you can look on my Instagram deal when you get into the insights, but I got some pretty big numbers who follow me, and 86% of them are young guys between the ages of 18 and 30. So I get a lot of questions about how can I get into the business? What do I need to do? And you're going to think I'm lying, but this is the story I tell them. I said, I give them a lot of advice. I said, first, you make yourself just irreplaceable to your boss. I said, be careful and pick somebody who you really want to work for. Make sure it's a passion. And I said, and then always be the go-to guy. Always be there. Be willing to do, you know, whatever it is. Mop the floor, do whatever. And I tell them the story. And I wasn't there, but I had two buddies that were there about an outdoor writer sent this guy named Ray I put on in Missouri. And this guy went and got like two couches and hauled them out to this rig and made coffee on the day before turkey season opened, and had those riders sitting on those couches listening to those turkeys gobble, sitting on the couch drinking coffee. And I was like, if you're willing to do that to go to the next level, you'll be successful beyond your wildest dreams. And I promise you, I've told that story 10,000 times. That's commitment. You know, there's a lot of difference in how people think and how people put forward a big effort. But if you're willing to go to that level, you will separate yourself from the pack so fast, and success will be within your grasp. True story. And you know it's true because you did.
Yes, I do. It was so much fun when we did that. We put them in the couches. Yeah, those guys still talk about that. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good stuff.
That's a good example right there of how to be successful.
I want to thank you, Cuz Strickland, for taking the time. It's an honor and a privilege, and we thank you very much, my friend.
Well, it's an honor to be. And again, I feel like I should be interviewing you, and one day I will. Thank you for being a guiding light and one of the turkey hunting outdoor mafia in my life, Ray. You're a great American.
Thank you, Cuz. Appreciate it, my friend. You take care of my brother. Hey, if I haven't told you lately, I love you.
I love you too, brother. Thanks for everything.
Well, we appreciate each and every one of you. Be careful out there in the woods and on the waters. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next week right here on Eye on the Outdoors. Say bye, Peanut.
Thanks for joining us, and always be a positive role model for hunting, gun ownership, and conservation. We'll see you next time around the campfire.
But there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless.